Welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. It is crazy, guys. We only got 3 weeks left of the regular season. March Madness is upon us. And so we have to turn to one of the best, I don't know, maybe the best to come on this show. Once again, welcome back, Dr. John Giannini, former coach of LaSalle, now NBC Sports analyst. Thanks for joining us again, coach.
No, it's a blast to talk A-10 hoops, and you guys do a phenomenal job. And I know we talked a little bit. You're going to start with Davidson. So I listened to you guys before the season looking for A-10 content, like what are people thinking? And whichever one of you said the key to Davidson is Brajkovic because the other guys are kind of going to be maxed out, whoever said that is way better than me. That's who takes credit for that?
All right, I'm going to say, I think that might be the only thing in 4 years that I've gotten right on this podcast, but I appreciate that because he has been great.
Your rationale was spot on. And, you know, I think he's one of three player of the year guys, but you called it, man. Anyone else preseason would have said Lee. You nailed it, man.
Whoa. I'm taking this one then because Matt loves Hyungjoon Lee. I think I said that Brajkovic was a key, but didn't think that he would perform as well as he did.
No. You said, okay. Lee literally can't play better. He literally can't statistically compared to what he did last year. And people are going to chase him around. The way to defend them, and it's turning out to be true. Everyone's sticking with the shooters, and they think, okay, rather than leaving all these guys open, we'll make Brajkovic beat us. And guess what? It's really hard for one guy to be good enough to have that high usage and to have that kind of pressure on him. But he's produced, and they've won with him getting single coverage and just beating everybody. So kudos to you guys. You saw it.
Yeah, I mean, Brajkovic has been great, and I think that's where we want to start with Davidson. They have been pretty much leading the A-10 the entire season after a surprisingly great non-conference. They finished off with a win against Alabama, but last couple weeks really haven't been going that well for the Wildcats. They've been getting away with it for the most part, grinding out these close games against the likes of Fordham. They took St. Joe's to overtime, but finally caught up with them against Rhode Island where they lost over the weekend. So really what we want to look at, how do you think they get back on track? Do you think they still can finish this season strong and hold on to first place in the A-10?
Well, they are on track. They never got off track. Two things. First, people have gotten better at defending them, and it all started with the Fordham game. The most creative defense by far that I've seen in a long time is what Fordham is doing now. If you can't or don't shoot, they literally don't guard you. So against Duke Davidson, they play what I would call three and a stick. They guard the three shooters and literally never leave them. And then it's a two-person zone, one at the high post, one at the low post. And McKillop, of course, being brilliant, countered it and started to dive the high post because Fordham had just put that defense in. The high post guy didn't drop down and match up, and they got some post-to-post dish-offs for layups. But Fordham was up that whole game. And this is what I would tell anyone looking at Davidson. You can't guard their offense. I'm not exaggerating. I got it right now in my coaching rankings above the Princeton offense. It's brilliant. It is unique. It's a brand. And you can't guard the offense, but you can guard the personnel because they only have three shooters that you got. And those three shooters are scary. They're all potential 50, 40, 90 guys. Like only 11 people have ever done it. Well, they have three guys on one team who are capable of doing it. But you just stay with the shooters, guard Brajkovic one-on-one, let Brajkovic make his two or three plays. Don't guard Menega. And people have figured it out, but Fordham showed everyone the blueprint. And then the Rhode Islands, the St. Louis's and VCU's, they're just really good defensively no matter who they play. They're athletically a little better than a lot of people, and they're just flat out good on the defensive end. So I just think that people, either Davidson's playing athletic, really good defensive teams, or they're playing teams that have figured out how to scheme them. And then the two less deep teams, Davidson and St. Bonaventure, I know that's something you guys talk about. The wore down thing is a factor. And all you need to do is be 1% off, be at 99% instead of 100%. And now you're losing a close game or two instead of winning.
And so they have a decently tough schedule to go. At the time we're recording this, it's Monday afternoon, so they have not yet played their home game against Duquesne. So three of their final six, they play St. Louis, Fordham, and Dayton. Three pretty good defenses. Is there, I guess basically, do you see them finding a way to start to counter this in one of those games, finding a way to get Hyungjoon Lee going, or is this just kind of the rest of the season unless they're playing a Duquesne type?
I had them, like, the defense against Lee is, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. I mean, people on all three of the shooters, they are chased, harassed, dealt with physically, and normally in the offense, if you go play normal defense, they just curl or get back door and kill you with layups. Against Davidson, you can't guard the offense. If you try to take away threes, they get twos. If you try to play them honest, they get the threes on against your help. The only thing you could do is scheme based on their personnel, and that's what everyone's doing outside of, you know, the three teams that don't think they need to scheme and are good defensively. So I don't think there's anything they can do. But like you said, every game is close. They're going to be right there. No one's better coached. They have good players. They're just going to play close games. They're not going to be making. Teams just aren't going to let those shooters go crazy. They're just not going to allow it. And the only time they really get big leads is when they make a ton of threes. And people aren't going to let them do that. They're just not.
So I'll follow this up too then. Because you believe that Davidson's going to have to slug through the rest of this season, and you mentioned us before, this is such a fun season now. Davidson's kind of dropped back down to the rest of those top four teams. So who do you think comes out with the regular season title here? I believe it's Davidson a game up on Dayton and VCU. I'll check that to make sure I'm right. And then St. Louis is kind of hanging right below the rest of them. St. Bonaventure's still only at four losses. Maybe they could be a dark horse, but they're a little bit behind the eight ball.
So I've seen better teams at the top of the A-10, but I've never seen six so equally matched teams that far down the standings from one to six. If one plays six, it's a pick'em, and that usually isn't the case in any conference. So the unique thing about the A-10 right now is the incredible balance one through six. But since you don't want me to wimp out on your question and I should answer it, I'll go with Dayton for this reason. Best offensive field goal percentage in league play, best defensive field goal percentage in league play, best three-point shooting percentage. They're as big as anyone. They're as athletic as anyone. I know they're a little younger, but they're not showing it. And of course, their home court advantage is ridiculous. So I would have to pick Dayton. And then looking at them into the future, if they keep that core group, I mean, that's a top 25 team.
Yeah, we didn't think that we would be saying this in November when they lost all of those games early on. But I think right now, too, if you look at it, Dayton very much controls their own destiny because they are only one game behind Davidson right now. But that is their last game of the season on – I guess it's senior night. Dayton doesn't have any seniors, but
because sadly for me, I'm doing more Conference USA games right now than the A-10. Mm-hmm. Me watching the A-10 is more just because I want to stay where I am with, in terms of knowledge with the league. I don't want to lose that. I'd like to be back doing a lot of A-10. But because I'm not doing the super hard dive on it, a lot of my stuff now is the eye test, and I like Dayton by the eye test too. I mean, they are big and they are athletic. And here's the other thing from a coaching point of view. In the past, Coach Grant's teams have been unselfish, great passing, great role definition, great shot selection, good defense. So, of course, that with good players, that's why they won. They didn't press. They're pressing now, and it's a really good press. They didn't run a lot of unique sets, things that you don't usually see. They've expanded their playbook. They are doing some tricky, funky things. So from the young talent to the size, the athleticism, but the stuff that Coach Grant is doing strategically right now, he hasn't done those things before. Like, he's continuing to evolve with his team and, you know, going from good to great. You know, everyone wants to go from good to great. I think he's going from good to great.
Yeah, that team has taken a huge, huge step up as this season has gone on. Like we mentioned, they lose those terrible games at the beginning of the year. Now they're out there picking up wins, obviously over Kansas was early in the season, but dominating St. Bonaventure, beating VCU on the road. It's incredibly impressive. And I want to ask you about one player in specific, Daron Holmes, who has gone from a bench player to start the year to now a certain all-conference guy this season, maybe even more next year. Where do you think his ceiling lies? Maybe not necessarily this year, but going forward.
So the NBA is about shooting, even if you're 6'10", and it's a shame that so few people still value the traditional center, like, which I still think there's great value in. You don't have to have five shooters. I think having a rim protector, rebounder, screener, finisher, efficient guy still matters. But a lot of people in the NBA, they want five shooters. That's, in my mind, the thing that is the only limiting factor right now. He is big and bouncy. He looks the part. It's just skill development, you know, in shooting. You know, if he develops his shooting, you know, he's a potential first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's grown so much throughout the season. Early on, we knew he was going to be a good defensive player. We could see that when I think he blocked six shots in his second college game. But really what I've been impressed by is his offense down the stretch of the second half of the season. And while that shooting is something he is going to have to work on a lot over the offseason, clearly, he has given Dayton a big inside presence. And I think that is a big reason why they have been one of the best or had one of the best field goal percentages in the conference.
No, they're really, really good. And I know you guys, I'm sure it's everyone sees it. Smith is equally good at his position and they have shooters. And is Kamara able to come back next year?
Yeah,
he is.
He might actually have one more after that.
Yeah, it's they're going to be terrific.
So we couldn't possibly disagree with that. We love this team going forward. So we'll take it over to a team that we all thought was going to be terrific this year. And that's St. Bonaventure. And they've just kind of sputtered after a great November. They have not been the same since Kyle Lofton got hurt. And the biggest reason why is the defense has just taken a step back this year. Well, we saw Friday night at St. Louis. And I want to preface to everyone, they play St. Louis again at the Riley Center tonight. So by the time you hear this, that game will have happened. But that was the best defensive game I think I've seen from them since they beat Marquette. So from your perspective, where do they go? And is there a reason why they're struggling so badly this year?
We've talked about this a while ago. There's no question in my mind. They always say get old and stay old. And that's still true. But you could also be too old. There is a in the inverted U. At some point, you could be too old. And I'm telling you that coaches now push these kids in the summer. Kids don't go home for most of the summer. They're there training. And when you're at a place for four or five years, so the motivation's there. I'm not saying it's a motivational thing. I'm saying it's a stale thing. It's a been there, done that thing with some of these older teams. Now, that being said, the energy, and we're only talking, as I said, I love this 212-degree boiling example. To be good, you got to be boiling hot. And water boils at 212 degrees. 211, it does not boil. Like that 1 degree or 1%, it makes a difference. You don't watch any of these teams and think, oh, they're not trying or they're not competing. But it's having the edge, having the energy, being laser focused. And sometimes, like Dayton has, that sense of newness and excitement and, you know, what can we achieve gives you that extra energy. I think Richmond and St. Bonaventure are old. And I think from sometimes a tiny energy deficit being 211 degrees as opposed to 212, sometimes I think they play old. You have the experience and know how to play benefit, but sometimes you don't have that energy. I think teams get stale. But to your point, and obviously I have close friends on that staff, and I agree, Lofton has just in the last couple of weeks been his normal self, and that's the biggest factor. I mean, there's no player that's more important to their team than Kyle Lofton.
Yeah, that Friday night St. Louis game was the first time where I felt like Kyle Lofton was back. He was hitting that long two-point pull-up jumper again, and I saw him in person a few weeks ago. He took that shot wide open probably five times in that St. Joe's game, and every one of them just clanged off the rim. So it just didn't feel right. He was getting his shots. They just weren't going down.
Well, here's the scary thing for St. Bonaventure fans about that rematch. Bonnie's defense was great, but in transition, Jimerson had three good looks. Not against bad defense, just by pushing the ball before the defense got set, getting a second. Jimerson just missed him open once he normally makes. And you're right, the Bonnies made all those mid-range shots. And I know you guys look at analytics and understand it. Like, those are tough shots to make. So even though they're at home, it's going to be hard for them to duplicate that. You don't think Jimerson's going to miss open shots? And can you keep making all those mid-range?
Yeah, and a week before, they gave up a lot of open transition threes to Richmond, too. And Tyler Burton killed them, but Gilliard and Gustafson just weren't hitting that night.
So, to your point, though, I looked at their energy, and they you're right. Yeah, they didn't look like they did Friday night at St. Louis or last year or in the Charleston Classic. And, you know, and what you attribute that to, who knows? If someone understood all the answers to motivation, they would maximize everyone and write books and be unbelievably wealthy. But my theory is it's just a little bit of staleness sometimes, I think. And I think you can be too old. These college basketball seasons and off seasons and training programs are really, really long.
You think a lot of it, I think the most common fan criticism we see, and I think it's just because it's the easiest thing to look at, St. Bonaventure is dead last in the country in bench minutes. They're pretty much doing what they did last year, the Iron Man 5, they always say on TV. They never come out of the game. So, do you think that's something that caught up with them, or is it just other, like, external factors, maybe?
I think it's more the 4 years than playing a few extra minutes. But here's what makes – so everyone in life, your strength is your weakness. It really is. Because what people do is they rely on their strength until it becomes a weakness. But the chemistry between those five players is at the highest level. Mm-hmm. It's their defensive communication, rotations, their ability to execute that playbook, their ability to read defenses, their ability to just have confidence in each other in terms of moving the ball is second to none in the country. And when you sub, it's not just the talent that is affected. It is what makes them special. It is that connectedness. Like, when they sub, that team's not the same. So, obviously, Coach Schmidt tries to steal some minutes here and there to keep a guy out of foul trouble or to keep him a little bit fresh. But you can't have it both ways with St. Bonaventure. If you sub more, you don't have this remarkable chemistry and upside. And if you don't sub that much, well, now you might get a little tired, but you can't have it both ways. And if I was Coach Schmidt, I'd probably want my best five guys out there as much as possible. they're unique. I mean, those guys are just better than the guys coming off the bench. But more than anything, their 4 years of doing everything together is what really makes that lineup great and diminishes it when they're not together.
And we've always kind of felt like those five fit together so perfectly. They had the four that played extremely well 3 years ago and that playing with, I believe it was Justin Winston was the fifth starter at that point. And then Attaway comes in and he's just this perfect piece who helps them so much on rebounding and defense. So that is something very special. And it's the reason why I know we're supposed to be unbiased here, but if St. Bonaventure has a chance to make it back to the tournament this year one last time with those guys and maybe make a run this time instead of running into Cam Thomas and LSU, that's certainly something I'd be happy to root for. So tune in to the Ivy League Hoops Hour, your source for all things men's basketball in the Ancient Eight. Hosted by Coach Sidney Johnson, former head coach of the Princeton Tigers from 2007 to 2011, and his co-host, former grad assistant Lawrence Schuler, you'll hear from student-athletes and coaches on their experiences and perspectives on competing in the Ivy League, issues that challenge Ivy League athletics, and analysis on the teams and players from Coach Johnson. All of this in spite of Lawrence's best efforts to deconstruct the whole thing. We invite you to listen to the Ivy League Hoops Hour podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you consume your podcast content. Looking ahead towards the remainder of this season, though, it's a very crowded top of the conference in terms of players, not just teams. So who do you feel is the most important guy down the stretch in this league? You could pick from, I really think there's eight or nine acceptable answers here at this point in the season.
Well, I got to leave one of these players off my first three all-conference teams. And they all could have been first-team all-conference. I have Lee, Baldwin, Gillier, Golden, Schwartz, Oshunyi fighting to make a third-team all-conference on my list. So this is the crazy thing about the Atlantic 10 this year. I believe, now, I don't have the math to do this. This is just like an instinct, and I could be wrong. I think we have more power, more autonomy five Big East wins than we ever have. I think that we have more good players than we ever have. When I was coaching, I'd have about 18 people for the 15 spots. I have 24 here that I think are really good players, all conference type players. So more good wins, more good players. So what's the problem? I can't explain it, but there's more bad losses. There's more bye game losses. There's more low major losses. It's really hard to explain, but yeah, the league has got a ton of good players. So down the stretch, I said how people are going to defend Davidson. So they're going to continue to cover Brajkovic one-on-one in the post. Brajkovic is going to continue to have open looks from three. Forget about Lawyer, Lee, and Jones. They're not going to be able to breathe. So I would say Brajkovic individually is going to continue to be most important. After that, I'd have Williams and Baldwin for VCU. Collins and Jimerson have been great all year. And Lofton, those other St. Bonaventure starters are all terrific, all potential all-conference players, but it's all about Lofton. And it always has been. If he's not at his best, they're just not at that level. And then I still think that Golden is the key for Richmond. He's got to make some of those threes. He's going to have the ball in the half-court offense. As spectacular as Burton is, it's almost like I'm counting on him, and he can do those things, and Gilliard's consistent. But Golden, he needs to make some of those threes, and I think he needs to play at a high level. So I would say those guys are the key.
I'll ask you a quick question in passing, too, since you mentioned Grant Golden. To me, it almost looks like Richmond's running a different offensive system this year. It's more three-point-oriented, more Burton and Gilliard iso-oriented than Golden in the high post. Am I misseeing this? Am I kind of looking for something that's not necessarily there? But
you're probably seeing the truth. I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact. I don't think Coach Mooney has designed it that way. I think when you play close games and, you know, just like Davidson now, people kind of understand what Richmond is doing with the cutting and the Princeton approach. And when you get late in the shot clock, that's what you're going to get, some isolations and Gilliard in a pick and roll. So I think it's more the league's familiarity with each other. And I would attribute it to that. I don't – if you look at the first 20 seconds of the shot clock, I bet a lot of it is what you're used to seeing. I think defenses are just probably forcing them to go later, and that's where they need Burton and Gilliard to make plays.
So you've mentioned the coaching perspective throughout this pod. And so I want
any other perspective. I don't know any other perspective, but go ahead.
So we'll go back to your days at LaSalle going down the stretch. As we get into the final month of the season, and like you mentioned, guys start to get stale, defenses start to adjust. This is, I assume, the toughest weeks of the year for a coach. What are you telling your players at this point? If you're a good team, what are you trying to instill as we get across the finish line? If you're, say, Mark Schmidt, Anthony Grant, Travis Ford, any of these guys who have a good team with them this year?
So there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and they would do things differently. There's no one recipe. There's no one way. There's no one message. Everyone's different. There's some coaches on that list that are going to – I'll go back. I remember a coach, I'll mention Bill Herrien, back when I was in the American East, and he was at Drexel with Malik Rose. They would call their conference tournament week Hell Week. They would scrimmage unbelievably hard. They would literally come to the tournament bandaged up, but then they would out-tough everyone. Travis Ford told me Rick Pitino would do double sessions in March. So, and then you have other coaches like me who believe in keeping them fresh and healthy, not going into the tournament all bandaged up. So everyone's going to have different approaches in terms of how they run practice, how much they value reps and competition and toughness versus staying healthy and fresh. Certainly your experience and depth level will affect that. And then some coaches don't talk about winning. They talk about, hey, if we – you know, contain the whatever their non-negotiables are. If we win our one-on-one battles, if we keep the ball out of the paint, if we're good rebounding and box out and do our fundamentals, we'll be fine. Other coaches, and I did this, I would tell our guys, I remember we had a couple road games at George Washington and at Rhode Island. I flat out told them, this is a must win. If we don't win this game, we're not in the NCAA tournament. So you have coaches who talk about winning, coaches who never talk about winning, coaches who practice 45 minutes a day, coaches who do doubles a day. But the one thing we'll all say, February is the shortest month, but it is the longest month in college basketball. It never ends, just because every conference game is a battle and you're focused and obsessed every second of the day.
That's a great take. Matt, I don't know where you want to go with this.
I think that's a great perspective on it, that each team needs to handle it differently. And I mean, I think for me, looking at it, you know, we don't like to bring this up on the Three Bid League podcast, but I think the most important thing for most of these coaches is just they need to get their team in the best position for conference championship week, because really it's looking like Davidson, maybe Coach McKillop might be in that mindset where we got to beat Dayton, we got to beat St. Louis, like the tough games they have left. But otherwise, teams just need to be ready to show up in D.C.
Yeah, I would guess in his case that he's very much a process-oriented coach. I bet he's one of those. Now, he's thinking about winning nonstop, but I bet he's a process-type guy where he is emphasizing execution and saying, hey, if we do what we're supposed to do, everything will take care of itself.
Yeah, and I think I would, at this point, I would trust whatever his judgment is, because he's been in this position before in the A-10 a couple times back before the A-10. So, yeah, definitely.
So we can never see – none of us will ever have the capability of seeing things through your coaching perspective. whether it's me or Matt or just our fans listening, but I think we can all kind of at least fake it to see it through your broadcasting perspective, because in the end, we are still watching from 100 feet up, looking at both teams. So now in your second career as a broadcaster, what are things that you would be looking for from just any of these teams as we head down the stretch? Things that you're looking for to identify a team that could potentially win the A-10 tournament?
Yeah, I think it's completeness, lack of glaring weaknesses. And the team that fits that the best right now is Dayton, probably second, St. Louis. Because I'm looking at teams that can shoot, people that are really good defensively, people with some depth, you know, and but like I said, any one of those top six, it is a pick'em. You take any of those top six, put them head to head on a neutral court, and it's a pick'em. But at the end of the day, you know, we said, okay, maybe this team doesn't have enough shooting. This team might not have enough depth. They're like a turned ankle or foul trouble away from trouble. Or this team is really good on one end, but they're not good on the other end. I think the ones that are most complete to me so far are Dayton and St. Louis.
And is there any team in the bottom half outside of that top six that you feel like could make some noise, a team that maybe you don't want to see in the quarterfinals?
Well, anyone can – a lot of those teams can win a game. One of the most impressive results to me this year was St. Joe's blowing out Richmond at Richmond. So, you know, if you shoot the ball well and the other team doesn't, anything could happen. But George Mason has shown that they're the closest thing that there is to those top six. They're talented. They're playing with energy. Their defense has not always been great, but – they're talented and they're good offensively. And I would say that they are a team that could make it to the semifinals of the conference tournament.
Interesting. So we'll close things out with this. So you not only cover the A-10, you also do a lot of good work for Conference USA over on the Stadium Network. And they tend to give you some very good games over there. So Conference USA is always a bizarre conference. We talk about the A-10 being wild in March. And to me, there's three that are always just more wild than the rest. It's the A-10, it's Conference USA, and it's the MAC that always produce great drama. So if people make their way over to Conference USA, they play a lot of late games after the A-10 is done. So it's a good late night alternative. What's just kind of one team, one player that are very entertaining, very interesting to watch over in that conference?
I'll give you more than that, but I'll go quick enough to do that. No one better defensively anywhere than North Texas, who beat Purdue in the NCAA tournament last year. They are, if you were to combine a Virginia and a Texas Tech, that's what they're like. They're astounding defensively in terms of their half court. UAB is the Conference USA version of VCU. They're that kind of defense, full court pressure, turn you over. They're absolutely VCU. Players, Sharp, 7'5" at Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. He is potentially one of the all-time great shot blockers, maybe even at the NBA level. 7'5", and he runs like a deer, is unbelievable. Then Lofton Jr. at Louisiana Tech, USA under 19, they have Holmgren, All-American from Gonzaga. They have Taylor, All-American from Wisconsin. Ivy, All-American for Purdue. The leading scorer on that team was Kenneth Lofton Jr. He is not Charles Barkley, but he is the closest thing you will see in college basketball to Charles Barkley. So for players, Lofton Jr. at Louisiana Tech, Sharp, 7'5", shocking shot blocker at Western Kentucky. Then for teams, the most sound team ever, North Texas, and UAB, they're the VCU of Conference USA. And that league has won in the NCAA tournament 5 of the last 6 years. They always get one bid, which shouldn't be. But when you win every year in the tournament, you probably have people who belong there.
Yeah, as I said, Conference USA is always fun. They're the funky tournament, if anyone can't remember, that plays two games right next to each other with the curtain down in the early rounds of their conference tournament. They are wholly their own in that way. And so, Coach Giannini, any closing thoughts about the A-10 or the Conference USA that you feel like should be included for our listeners?
Well, I love Conference USA. I love stadium, but A-10 is home for me. I hope to do more of that in the future. And what I would say is those 3 Dayton losses early in the year, like, thank God Dayton has beaten Kansas and beaten Miami and beaten Virginia Tech and really helped the league. But my goodness, if they would have won those 3 games or even 2 of them, you know, the A-10 would be looking at a bunch of, you know, multi-bids. Not only would Dayton be a shoe-in, but every game against Dayton then would be that much highly valued for every other team. So the A-10's going to, you know, the A-10 is unbelievably close to, you know, being where it normally is.
Yeah. All we can do is laugh about those terrible games. And then just finally, any games you got coming up this week that we should be tuning into that you're on the call? It's hard to figure out who's calling games until the day of for some of these networks.
I don't have another A-10 game until the rematch of that game I mentioned, Fordham at Davidson. And then my next Conference USA game is Louisiana Tech at Rice, and then I have Louisiana Tech, this will be a great game, at UAB on the last day of the season. That's kind of like our Davidson versus Dayton finale. And then I'll have the Conference USA tournament, and like I said, hoping I spend more time with the conference of my roots in the future, but that's my schedule coming up.
Yeah, good chance for everyone to hear you on the Davidson Fordham game. You've had so many great takes about both of those teams in this pod, so we will be ready for that and a chance to hear you and see Kenneth Lofton together on that Louisiana Tech game. Coach Giannini, thank you as always. Just absolutely one of the best in broadcasting, and we really appreciate every minute that you give us on this show.
Thank you. You guys do unbelievable work, and congratulations on nailing Brajkovic for Player of the Year in August.
We thank you for that, and we really thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you, man.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of the 3Bid League podcast. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please leave us 5 stars on iTunes. If you have any comments, feel free to send them our way, either on Twitter, @3BidLeaguePod, or if you prefer, you can shoot us an email, number3bidleague@gmail.com. We got anywhere from 6 to 7 games left for each team in the regular season. So let's all enjoy the remainder of this year. The A-10 tournament, Washington, D.C., they are coming up right in front of the windshield.